Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here. Joining me today, Henry Cloud, Jill Hubbard, and you on New Life Live. Glad you're with us here today on New Life.
I find myself constantly trying to take care of everything for my husband.
I'm in a marriage. I just got married 3 months ago, and it's a complete disaster.
I feel like my life is nothing but a rut.
Well, that's good news, because a rut has two open ends. A grave has the ends already filled in.
Boundaries don't have to have timelines. You just simply say, when this behavior ceases, when you get into therapy, when you do the following things, then we will talk.
God's whole program is, when we've been trying it one way, then we try it His way.
Play therapy or drawing, art therapy, that works really well
takes
with children.
Time.
That's what your 30 days of celibacy has brought to light, is that, okay, you can manage this, but boy, he can't.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud. Hey, Henry.
Hey, Stevie.
And Dr. Jill Hubbard.
Hey, Steve.
And all of you, thank you for joining us today. We're grateful that you're here. And I want to start the program. I love letters from listeners. I want to start right here with this letter. It says, Dear New Life, we are so blessed by your ministry and your daily program. When I discovered my husband on the computer, very inappropriate websites 8 years ago, I knew just what to do. He got the help he needed through EMB in Malibu, California, and it was just the beginning of building our marriage. Today, he can be trusted. He says what he means, where he's going, etc. Previously, every move was suspect. I can't put into words the joy that fills my heart related to your help. Your books have been awesome. The interaction on your program between Dr. Stoop, Mylon, Jill, John, Henry. I love you all. Thanks so much. Well, I love letters like that. And, you know, it reminds me that we've got an Everyman's Battle coming up in 2 weeks. And that's the last one for the year. And you literally can, I don't know how, whether you'd say it reworks your personality over time, but you end up being a totally different person. Would you guys say that's a personality change, shift? How would you describe it?
Well, it's certainly a full paradigm shift for people. And I think they're able to access a better part of themselves and feel more whole. They're not so compartmentalized anymore. And that certainly, when you're using all of who God intended you to be, is much better than when you're just kind of hiding in the shadows.
Yeah. All right. Very well said. Henry, any thoughts on that?
Whether people go through personality shifts or not?
Whether that, you know, when somebody, they can't be trusted, they're online, they're unfaithful, and then, boom, 2 years later, they're faithful, they're trustworthy.
Yeah.
What is that?
I kind of think of it with two words. I think of it as integration and maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible kind of paints a picture of I'm trying to make this brief that we know what happens in addiction, any kind of addiction. Ephesians 4 says that people go through a process, believer or unbeliever, because he's speaking to believers actually there, and he says that they get separated from the life of God. So somebody can have a relationship with God but be separated from his life. Life that involves having needs met, you know, being honest, growing, processing hurt and pain, processing sin, having gifts and abilities and talents and living those out. That's the life. We're meant to be plugged into life and thriving. And it says when we get separated from that, that then what happens is we get hardened from the needs and the feelings involved in that life. It says that we get past a state of feeling there in Ephesians 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says that there is a lust for sensual experiences that goes into a continuous lust for more, like there's never enough. And so it's that separation, as talked about in that passage, that causes people's real needs for real life to be unavailable to be met, and then this lust takes over. And so when people get integrated back to the life of God, then the maturity process kicks in, and you see things like self-control and other fruits of the Spirit, you know, begin to emerge, and it's a beautiful thing. And we made it there and within 2 seconds ago.
You sure did. Good job. We'll be back after this.
You think I'm a great person, full of life and fun to be around. You say you love me, but if you knew what was going on in my head, I don't think you'd love me anymore. I saw my first girly magazine when I was 7, and I was hooked. I look at porn every chance I get. I've tried to stop over and over again. Sometimes it works for a couple days, but then I fall right back into my old ways.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I want to stop. I need help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. Let's go to Linda from Fort Walton Beach, Florida. WEGS is the station. Hi there. How could we help you today?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling, and I would like to try to communicate to the best of my ability using as few words possible so you can tell me what I can do.
Okay.
I'm going to start with my daughter, who's now 33. She's been very independent and moved, you know, out of our home to go to college. And after college, got a great job, promoted, moved out west, climbed a corporate ladder. And then 18 months later, just every call was regarding different illnesses, eyes, feet, kidney stones, arms, ear, skin. Mm. Every conversation began to be about doctor's visits or new prescriptions. After 3.5 years and having moved to another state with another job promotion, she decided to move home.
Okay.
Home to our town, lived with us for 6 months, got her own home, started teaching. This is her 5th year of teaching. She has progressively gone downhill in her health and was diagnosed with neuropathy.
Okay.
About 4 or 5 years ago. And came to us last week and told us that she wants to go on long-term disability.
Mm.
And kind of throw in the towel. And
okay.
I thought I had convinced her for, you know, let's just take a 3-month leave of absence. Let's get your head clear. Let's get you some counseling. And I thought she had agreed to that and called her dad this morning and said she's going to go for the long-term disability.
Mm. And the question for us then is?
The question for you is, if you were this parent, what would you do?
Okay. Let me just ask you this. What has been your response to all this with her?
Well, over the years, we've encouraged her. We've, you know, when she had kidney stones, I went up while she was in the hospital and helped her, and sometimes we've talked to her about, you know, let's pray about it. I've given her healing as a choice. I can't think of a response we haven't had. Recently, the last 2 years, she decided she wanted to be a foster parent. And when she's been, you know, down with the pain, I would go over some evenings and help get the children bathed and ready for bed, or I mean, I've helped, I've encouraged, I've sent her scripture.
Linda, what are you afraid of in your daughter's decision?
I am afraid that she's quitting on life.
Okay. And if she were to quit on life, what would that mean?
Well, she's just such a go-getter. I see her as the potential, so much potential. And it would mean to me, what I understand about long-term disability is you sit around and wait for somebody else to pay your bills. And my husband's an insurance agent, and he explained to me, you know, after long-term disability, you really can't go out and get a real job. You can't work. You probably can't get health care. And She's 33.
Mm-hmm.
Very intelligent.
Now, so do you think that she's kind of not really needing to go on disability then?
I don't really know. I know that she's been to the Mayo Clinic. I know she's been to every possible place she could go. And I think, let me give you an example. This past weekend, she was in a wedding. She spent 3 days down at the beach at the wedding, being the bridesmaid, doing all this stuff. And I can't comprehend how she couldn't even just go to a part-time job mm-hmm. when she has, you know, when she can do the things that
yeah.
she wants
so
her to do.
So, Linda, it's hard for you to accept that she's really this bad off. And you feel
right now she's very bad off.
Okay, but you fear that this is a life sentence. That things of what?
I believe she's probably at the lowest point she's ever gotten physically and certainly emotionally.
Mm-hmm. So she's depressed along with this.
I'm not sure. She
okay.
won't say that.
Okay.
She's very down.
Mm-hmm.
She gets on Facebook and says, you know, I have insomnia, the pain's so bad, I was vomiting from the pain, and I just keep saying to her, Deb, you know, can you put something pleasant on Facebook? You know, what can I do to encourage you? She's not, she'll say that she's been going to church, but the last 2 years since she's gotten a kid, she just goes on her day to work the nursery.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time figuring out how we can help you.
Well, I need to know whether to. I mean, my husband and I have talked about what really amazing things. Let's do an intervention. Let's go talk to her. I just can't imagine that she understands that this is the beginning of the end.
Well, you know, I know people who have had to choose disability, and then they are able to work because you're able to earn so much. And it frees them up from the pressure of, you know, trying to maintain a full-time job, which they can't do.
Okay.
But to kind of have some help in life while they're dealing with all of these illnesses. That it actually becomes quite a relief, and you know, it kind of depends on the person. I'm hearing your daughter is a go-getter. She's not one that's just looking for handouts.
Well, and maybe that's a part of my fear, that in the mm-hmm. last year I've watched her become more of that entitlement.
Yeah. Hey, Linda, it's Henry. Unfortunately, I had to step out for a second, and I missed the very first part of this, but I think I got it. But one of the things that's unclear as you continue to talk is it sounds like that you question whether or not she really is as bad off as she says she is.
Yeah.
Is that the big kernel of this in your head?
I guess I know right now that she's really bad, but I can't comprehend. She's had down times like this before.
But you can't comprehend what?
I can't comprehend that this is going to be the way it will be forever.
You don't believe it, you don't understand it, or it's difficult for you to emotionally accept it. Which one?
The latter.
The latter. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's, you know, if it's fuzzy, and it's fuzzy to you and your husband on how to help, and you're involved with her, and you guys are talking, there's no big conflicts here. What I would suggest you do is that just tell her, you know what, we want to be the most helpful we can to you and the most supportive. Would it be cool with you if we all went to see your doctor together, and so we can understand your illness as best we can, and to know the best role that we can play as helpers? And if you're going to be permanently disabled, what the best way that we can help? If you're going to be partially disabled, what's the best way we can help, et cetera? And if all of y'all got in the room, mm-hmm. what may surface, if there is this sort of uncertainty about it, is when you say things like, because sometimes I get encouraged when you go off and be bridesmaids for 3 days and do all these things and you're functioning, and sometimes I'm confused. Then the doctor might say, gosh, I didn't know that.
You know, if there's a malingering kind of aspect to this, maybe there's things he doesn't know, or maybe there's things that you don't know about how bad it is. But a lot of times it gets very helpful when the family gets involved with the doctors to know what's the best way you can help her.
And especially if she's depressed along with this, then you're not going to see the full picture. She's going to be more discouraged. And what I hear you doing, Linda, is that you're trying to encourage her. So you're going to the opposite direction of where you see her to try to ward off the thing that you fear. But a lot of times what ends up happening with that is then the person who is suffering feels more and more misunderstood.
I understand. That's exactly it.
Right? And so she's got to, like, kind of scream louder or go more kind of into it because you're not getting it.
Okay.
She's got to show you how bad it is. So your encouragement isn't necessarily going to pull her out of it, and you're moving toward her and understanding and really getting it isn't going to drive her more into depression. It actually will help lift it.
Okay.
So it's a little counterintuitive.
Okay, I see.
But it is really hard. Go ahead.
I think one of the fears I have, and I don't know enough, as mm-hmm. I fear a spirit of infirmity over her, that it's just the enemy trying to keep her from all she could be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's that sadness of seeing such a bright, shining star just slowly dim for you, you know? She had such hope and promise and has done so much in her life thus far.
Right.
And to see it just all go away. Wow. That's very hard. It's hard to be with somebody who is chronically ill and to be in that long-suffering place.
Yeah.
When you never thought that would be the direction. So that's why I like Henry's idea of you getting more information. And you actually...
Well, we went with her to the Mayo Clinic 3 years ago, and basically what we heard the doctor say was, you know, try to do like a get off all the drugs and find out which ones are really working and which ones aren't. And she's very savvy, and she's very involved with it. All kinds of different drugs.
Right, but that was a suggestion to start a process, and that was three years ago, and you're in a very different place now. And I think it's time for a good family kind of checkup on where she is and just a question of how can we be most helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well,
And we hope we've been helpful today for you, Linda.
Yeah. Let me send you Walking Into Walls. I hope something we've said has been of value to you. And God bless you. And I just pray for her healing and her motivation to come back and her hope to come back. Ron from Los Angeles, KKLA is the station. Hi, Ron.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Oh, boy, I would take a breather a little bit. I'm so nervous right now.
That's okay.
Okay, I'm ready. All right.
Okay, we're ready too.
Okay, this thing, I guess midlife, you want to call it, has been going through since 2002, and I go to a good church.
That's a midlife crisis since, did you say midlife crisis since 2002?
Well, it peaked up around 2006 and 7, and now I'm getting over it a little bit, but...
It peaked?
Okay.
That's
a long crisis, Ron.
Hey, Ron, I think you might have found the secret to longevity, you know, to be able to have a midlife crisis last 9 years, you know, that's...
It's a long time.
I'm 49 right now, so I'm almost 49, but anyways, I'm a Christian, and I go to a good church, and... within that time, you know, I literally considered five different careers, totally different, you know, careers, like from a makeup artist to mechanic, and I just, you know, chickened out.
It's kind of the same thing.
What was that?
I said it's kind of the same thing.
Makeup artist,
you know, you're working
mechanic.
On cars, you're working on faces, you know.
They both start with M.
But it's like I'm at this good church, And within those years, right in the middle, you know, I went to a psychotherapist because I had these thoughts of just, you know, just quitting in life, you know, just what else is there to do, you know? And in 2002, when I first time got my internet, you know, I dabbled with that for an hour one day, and I just got rid of it. And that really slowed me down, took me off the rails of the path, you know.
All right, now we're going to a break. Can you give us a question?
Yeah. The question is when I went to my psychotherapist, and I told him about, you know, the midlife thing, what do I do? And he actually probably, he said after three sessions, he said, well, you know, have you thought of, you know, counseling, you know, in your church? You know, there's a lot of needs for that, you know. And I do love, you know, serving, you know, helping out people.
Ask me a question real quick.
Okay, the question is, what do I do, like, secular-wise? It's like I feel sort of like not content, you know, in my secular area of work. And it's like, I'm just like...
All right, hold on.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
My relationships with my husband, with my friends, with my family are much richer and deeper and honest. Particularly my relationship with God, I see Him in a more accurate form and begin to trust Him more. There's joy and there's peace because I have the internal tools that I can trust. So it's radically changed my life. I'm just not even the same person.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
Take the leap, jump in, and go for it. It's changed my life completely.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
We are back. Ron, you still there?
Yes.
Ron, I'm sensing that you want to start over, that you didn't like the way things were going, and you'd like things to go well, and you want to make a fresh start. Is that true?
It's something like that, but it just takes so long just to, you know, I want to hurry up things, you know, but... I feel like I'm 49 years old, but maybe I should just say I'm 49 years young. But Ron, it's sort of like...
Ron, are you talking about what do you want to do for work? Is that what all this is about?
What was that? What was that again?
Are you talking about what you want to do for work? Is that what you mean by midlife crisis?
And, yeah, secular-wise, yeah.
I don't know what secular-wise means. What does that mean?
I mean secular work, I mean, yeah.
You mean...
Like what you want your job or career to be that... gives you money?
Yeah.
Versus
something like that, yeah. Right.
Working at church but or
I
working
do,
for the
I am,
kingdom?
I am at the church, and I do help out, you know, and I'm accountable to the pastor, and he you know, it's a good church, and the pastor says, you know, be faithful in the little things, and we'll see where the Lord leads you, what ministry, what gifts you have, you know.
Yeah, but you're talking about your kind of volunteer ministry life there. What you're asking us is about how to get a job?
Well, I do have a job, but it's like I feel sometimes I'm sort of uncontent with this career that I'm in.
Okay, so
years.
Back to what I was saying. It sounds like to me you want to start over.
Okay.
But that's okay if that's what you want.
Yeah, you're not happy. You're not satisfied. with where you're at in life.
Yeah, sometimes I do say that to myself. Yeah, yeah, you know.
Well, that's what I thought you were saying
job,
it here.
I do it unto the Lord. I do all mm-hmm. I can to be faithful. You know, I don't make a lot of income. I don't have a lot of. I don't pay a lot of rent. You know, I have.
Okay, but let's get back to the deal here. So, is it that you'd like to start over and find a different career if it's not too late?
Yeah, could be that. Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's been so desperate. I mean, I've
what's been desperate?
Different careers and not really procrastinating, you know, and not doing anything, you know. But at least I knock on doors. But it seems, you know, it's so difficult sometimes.
Ron, I'm hearing that, okay, you're 49 years old and you're kind of seeing this, you're at the halfway mark. You feel like your life is almost over and it's not where you thought it would be.
And
that's what I'm hearing.
And that you're feeling panic over that. But but I think more than the career, it sounds kind of like life organization, orientation, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about your connections. Versus a specific career. I mean, getting a certain career isn't going to necessarily make you start living.
Yeah, I hear you.
Right? Because you've tried a lot of different jobs and it still hasn't been satisfying. So there isn't just like the one job. It's just like people looking for the one person and suddenly they can start living.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's where God has you now. What are you doing with what you've been given thus far? What are you making of your life now?
Well, it's not much future in that, what I'm doing now.
Okay, I want to get back to this. It sounds like to me you want to get into a different job, a different career.
Yeah, something that naturally I could have as a talent, you know.
Okay, well, one thing you could do is you could find what your strengths are. You could do some surveys online that tell you what your strengths are and what careers are open to that. And then you could do some online studying so that you could have that career. You don't have to just be frustrated and do nothing. You're 49. You've probably got more of your adult life left than you've lived.
Yeah, I'm concerned with you looking at is like it's almost over and I've got to hurry up. I think it's, you know, you've got a lot left and a lot of people do great things after 50.
Yeah, that's what my pastor tells me.
So why is this desperateness of, oh my gosh, my life's almost over?
I don't know. It could be the way I was raised or the first church I went to, it was a very legalistic church, and I was just not really, could be also myself, maybe not praying or reading much or seeking the Lord, you know, just being religious, you know.
And if you were doing Christian. All of those things that you think you should be doing, how would your life look different today? Like, what
well,
is it?
I don't
it?
Know if I can do all those things.
Well, I know, but yeah. But I'm wondering what the picture is that you're trying to match that you feel like you haven't matched. What are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for something that will be able to, I could be used with my full potential.
Okay.
My gifts, my talents in the Lord, my natural gifts and my spiritual gifts.
And if we ask you what those were, Ron, what are they?
Well, I do teach and preach in a convalescent hospital, and I love doing that.
Okay, so you love teaching.
I love being a comedian and
that doesn't pay
laugh.
Too well. What you love to teach?
Yeah.
And make people laugh.
Yeah, they crack up. I do really weird, funny things. People just the riot, you know. And
Maybe after the break, we can talk a little bit about the path that the Bible talks about from finding who we are to expressing that into the real world. We can kind of talk to everybody
about
that.
Now we're talking. All right. We'll do that when we come back.
I just absolutely believe in the mission of New Life, and I feel that the materials provided and the biblical counseling perspective is so valuable and not available in so many places, and New Life and membership in Club New Life provides access to the live program and also CDs available to listen to. So I know it's easy to turn on the radio and receive the benefit, but those services don't come without expense. And I would sure like to see the program remain on. So I would like to challenge listeners who listen and receive benefit but haven't yet given to actually give this year and continue the giving, of course, because more people need to hear.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask how you can start your Club New Life membership today. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Max Licato here. As a pastor, I've seen how important it is for people to come and get good Christian counsel. People make decisions that turn out to be the wrong decision. I heard Steve Arterburn say on New Life not too long ago that the same thinking that got you into your mess isn't going to get you out of it. If you find yourself in a spot and you don't know what the next right thing to do is, then won't you call the good people at New Life? They have a network of Christian counselors around the country that's more than 850 strong. Call today 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. And tell them you need to find someone to help you. They're likely to have a counselor in your area to help you with whatever you're struggling with. It will be good, godly counsel. Call today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 639-5433.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
Okay, we're back. Steve Arterburn here. Henry, you're going to help from a biblical perspective, I believe, on how you go from where you are to what you want to do and the path there that is from the Bible.
Yeah, I was going to talk about a couple of things. One of my favorite passages, Steve, is in Romans 12, and you don't hear it talked about a lot, at least I've never heard it talked about a lot in its entirety. What I've heard a gazillion sermons on is when people take the one little verse out of there where it says, don't be conformed to this world, and they try to, you know, kind of use that to talk people out of going to movies and stuff. So I think if you look at the passage, there's a beautiful, beautiful passage in Scripture that is a guide to all of us. And it says that we start out, in view of how much God loves us and His mercy, we start out by offering ourselves a living sacrifice to God. So I think all of us have to go before God, lay down our lives and surrender to Him and say, God, I have no agenda. Please use me as your vessel. Mm. And then what it says is that we should get in this process of renewing our mind and not think as the world thinks, but to renew our mind according to the way that God thinks, and then we will find the perfect will of God. And so when we get off of this worldly track, oh, another big part in there says, do not be conformed to the patterns of this world. So identity has to do with, first of all, coming into a secure relationship with God. And then basically, like all identity formation, it comes from saying no to pressures that try to squeeze us into thinking what church or culture or parents or anybody else says that this is you. And instead, it goes on to telling us how to find our real selves. And what it says is the first step in that, say no to what everybody else is telling you you ought to be. And then it says the first step is a humbling step where we said don't think of yourselves more highly than you ought. And I see people getting stuck in the career path because of exactly that. These, you know, kind of grandiose like expectations of, you know, I want to be the CEO, or I want to be a surgeon, or I want to be this or that and the other, when generally that's not how people find their passion. The way they find their passion is they start off volunteering, you know, at a hospital, or they start off in a little bitty service place, and then they find that gift, and you find out
internship.
What...
Internship.
Exactly. Exactly. Or a small job in this industry or whatever.
then you find a gift. And if you watch the passage, it goes from humbling ourselves and serving and exercising our gifts to then it says, and if your gift is in teaching, you do this. If it's in this, if it's in this. And if you get out there and start working and serving, you're going to find something that turns your crank. And once you do that, it says do it diligently and you throw yourself into it. And then God provides a path. And then if you go to Proverbs, it says that a person's direction comes from their heart and God directs your steps. And what people do is they try to do it backwards and they try to do it outside in, like finding something that's going to make me happy. No, you find happiness in expressing who you are, mm-hmm. whether it's for fun at serving at the church or in a career.
Or making people laugh.
And then you go follow that and you pursue it with a hunger, not vice versa. And I think that would be a good thing to think about here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I hope that's helpful. And what's a great book that maybe would help Ron Henry as you think about this?
Oh, gosh.
How about changes
I wrote
heal?
A book. Well, I wrote a book called 9 Things You mm-hmm. Simply Must Do.
There you go.
Yeah.
And there's a section in there. There's a couple of sections in there. They're actually about this. And part of it, one of them is called Act Like the Ant. And it's about Proverbs 6 where God says, go and observe the ant. If you want to find out how to do big things, watch the way an ant does it. They take one little grain of sand and they move it a little bit down the road.
And
then you take the next one, and then you take the next one. And that's how careers are built, but they come out of passion. And I think, Ron, you got to find what your passion is and go express that wherever you can, and then that turns into a path.
Passion before path. I like it. All right. Glad you called.
Then you get paid for it. Passion, path, and payment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. All right, let's go to Lee from Atlanta, Georgia, WNIV. Hi, Lee. Welcome to New Life.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. How could we help today?
Well, I was calling asking for a book recommendation. One book that intrigued me on the show listening so far was the book you referred to an earlier caller, How to Find a Date Worth Keeping.
Yeah, that worth keeping is an important phrase, mm-hmm. right?
So I'm thinking that is a recommendation, but certainly there's more to the story that you may recommend something else.
Okay. What's going on with you?
Well, for the last 10 years, I was the primary caretaker of an elderly relative who passed away about a month ago.
Mm.
And for that period of time, that really was my life.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't room, I didn't make room, whether I didn't make it because I didn't want to or something deeper, for dating.
Okay.
And so I feel like, so now that assignment of caretaking is over. And certainly there's, one, just a void in the loss of that relationship.
Mm.
But a lesson I learned in the journey of that relationship.
Okay.
That I think is critical to, my interest in dating and moving forward.
Okay. So what is the question for us?
So the book recommendation.
Oh, well, How to Get a Date Worth Keeping is the ultimate book mm-hmm. for the ultimate single.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Now, I have a caution for you. Well, I'm afraid that you've been caretaking so long that you might find somebody that's kind of not all
needy.
There. Needy.
Oh, no. I think...
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, I cut you off, so let me not assume what I think you were going to say.
No, you assumed right.
Okay.
Lee, how old are you?
47.
47. So at 37, when you started this assignment, what did your dating life look like from 25 to 37 or 18 to 37?
I wouldn't call it healthy.
Well, what would you call
it?
Unhealthy.
Did it exist? Was it active? Was it passive?
It existed. It wasn't a lot of dating, but certainly, not some guy that I would consider long term. Not certainly not marriage
mm-hmm.
Material. Someone who I would, mix my DNA with and spend the rest of my life with.
What was that mix the DNA thing? Oh, you didn't do.
You didn't find.
You might.
Yeah,
didn't find.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I did meet someone who I would say that is. Oh, that's who I want to have.
Yeah, but did you? How many boyfriends did you have from age 21 until you started being this caretaker?
Right. Okay. Hold on. 5
Less than five.
So
more
you,
than two?
So you'd stay with him a while?
The very first one was a long time.
What's a long time?
A high school sweetheart. So, you know, probably like 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah, so high school to...
Okay,
you know,
so you let him stick around for 8 years without ever showing up with a ring?
Yeah, and that was the first and the most unhealthiest relationship I ever had.
Okay, so you went up, you moved kind of upward from there, it sounds like, a little healthier.
Yeah.
All right, well, what I would do is, you know, as part of this jumping back in there, I'd probably, what the book will tell you, it says get your team together. And you know...
I'm sorry, get my what together?
Your team. Sort of like a football team, T-E-A-M,
okay?
Dating shouldn't be done alone. You should have some people in your corner, because what you want to do is you want to go out there on a bunch of dates. You want to run back to your team and say, okay, here's what I said. Here's what he said. And they went, what? What are you doing? Run for your life. Or they'll say, wow, he sounds like a pretty good guy. And you're going to be new to the game, and you need some other sets of eyes, and you need some support, and you need this, that, and the other. So first get your team together. And because I'm a little bit afraid of some of these old patterns, what happens is you get off of the playing field for 10 years, you're going to jump back on the playing field, probably pretty much where you were developmentally before, and I don't want you to keep those patterns going, and you probably need some people to help you.
Right.
Okay, I hope that's helpful for you.
Okay, so is that the book that unanimously...
Coming,
yes.
Coming your way, and while it's on its way... You could be putting your team together.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Gotta go.
Lee, you sound like you'd be a lot of fun. So I think there's a lot of guys out there that would want to take you out to dinner and just listen to you make them laugh.
Well, I am a lot of fun. Like I said, the last 10 years, I had a different focus. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Just make sure you make them pay for it.
Okay.
If you're going to dinner,
will do.
They
promise.
Should pick up the check. All right.
Promise.
If they start talking about, well, it's so wonderful in this new dating era that women pay for things, you might want to excuse yourself to the restroom and not come back to the table. You want somebody that's going to do a little caretaking at some point. All right. We'll
see, that's an interesting point we should talk about.
Okay. We'll do it when we get back. You're listening to New Life Live. Glad you're with us here today on New Life.
I counsel people every single day. I help marriages. I help broken people find healing. I teach the good news of a Savior that loves us. But why can't I accept it myself and break free from this bondage? I can't stop looking at pictures that I shouldn't be looking at, and fantasizing and lusting, and now I've taken it a step further and gone to a strip club. I have to stop. I want to stop.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help, and I can't do this on my own. I want to be the pastor that God wants me to be.
1-800-NEW-LIFE. At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We're back. Henry, I had mentioned about a man saying, well, you know, maybe it's wonderful that women pay for things, and what do you do about that?
Well, I was just going to say, it was really interesting when I was writing that book and talking about, you know, men and women and what women want and doing a ton of research on this. It was really interesting when the book came out and I was doing a lot of the interviews and secular female self-named feminists, okay, that were doing the interview. In other words, the women would say, so what about who pays, you know, and kind of bring up this question. I heard so many of them say, and these were women who called themselves feminists, okay, they said, you know, I'm a feminist, and I still have a problem with a guy that won't pick up the check. She goes, I don't mind paying for this and that, she said, but I'm just not going to bring a guy home for the long term if he won't still treat me like a lady. And I thought it was so funny that, you know, forget the money part of it, that even, you know, self-proclaimed feminists said there's something about the male-female thing that they want to feel a little taken care of. And I think that's just like wired in, and that's not a bad thing, and it doesn't demean either gender. But what I was afraid of, exactly like you said with her, you know, she had been in the caretaking role, that a lot of times caretaking women can be attracted to men who need to be taken care of. And what single women need to make sure they learn early on is if this thing starts to, you know, the gravitational pull of this dating relationship is that you're going to be the caretaker, then you got a little boy and not a grown man. And so, you know, just be careful.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's one thing for something like that to come up on a first date.
Right.
But you know, at some point you start dating and the female just wants to pitch in, you know, and it's kind of a natural.
But it's a symbol. You know, the thing that I was laughing at, it's really not about the money. It's about...
It's symbolic of who they are.
And Jill, come on. What do you think? Would you call yourself a feminist?
Or are you just a modern woman? Yes, I would use more that term. But it is nice to have somebody want to do that, that puts themselves out there and
steps up
to the plate, that is more interested in that than, you know, a few dollars.
Right. There you go.
A realistic feminine woman. Does that describe it?
He'll open a door for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to get some honoring.
You know, like everybody wants to feel special.
Okay.
And in terms of women respecting men, when men do that for women, there's more respect going their way.
Absolutely. All right, I got a final caller. I don't have but a couple of minutes. Jan from St. Louis, Missouri, listens on the Internet. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'd like help conversing with my 31-year-old gay granddaughter. She and her partner of 11 years live with her parents while her mother's recovering from a liver transplant, and so we're together every day. I just want to be her grandmother and connect with her, but I see myself disconnecting when I hear her refer to her girlfriend as mother-in-law or wife, and
I get confused
when she talks about wedding rings and wedding gowns and the hope chest she's always dreamed of. So,
okay,
I usually listen and seldom comment, but any suggestions?
Well, I think it's always going to bother you, you know. But I think you have to let that go or accept that so that you can have some kind of relationship with her, so that she believes that someone of your faith, that it's real and it doesn't, you know, you don't use it as an excuse not to connect.
Okay.
I mean, that's my thought. I mean, Henry and Jill may have a different thought on a granddaughter-grandmother relationship.
Yeah, is she a believer?
She says she is, and she says, I could go to my grandmother's church, but she never will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that if it's at that kind of unknown, wishy-washy place, I don't mm-hmm. think that her, you know, her sexual orientation is the primary issue. I think if you go to, like 1 Corinthians 5, for example, it says that we have no role in judging people outside the church. That
right.
we're supposed to evaluate, you know, each other inside the family. And so if she's outside the body, I think your primary role with her is to love her.
Okay.
And to talk to her about God and about Jesus and in you know, whatever the right you know, an appropriate timetable of that is, and circumstance and appropriateness and all of that. So I would just, you know, I would love her and I would show her light, and then gradually as you get closer and closer to her, you know, more and more talk about God. And then when somebody's firmly in the camp and they start to look at, you know, what God says about various things and how they're going to choose to live that out, that's something that they're going to have to do. But I don't see where that has to come between you loving your granddaughter at all.
Okay.
Well, and it sounds like she's, Jan, very open with talking about things in front of you.
Yeah, so, she does come to me to talk about anything. She'll call and say, Grandma, I got to talk to you.
So she feels very accepted by you.
I think so.
Okay. But I think it's still okay to be open with her in that, you know, okay, you know, sweetheart, I'm a little old-fashioned and I'm a little confused of what you're talking about here. Or,
yeah,
you know, to kind of interject something. You don't have to be frozen in the conversation. I think you can relate to her and say, help me understand, you know, how that works for you.
That's what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's, you know, you can be inquisitive without being judgmental.
Yes, that's...
And it helps her think about things, too.
And how
she comes across.
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to send you Jill's book, The Secrets Women Keep. I hope you'll like that.
I do have that.
Good.
I've asked her if she wanted to read it, but she's not interested yet. But
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I'll send you, Henry, let's send one of your books to her.
What would be, I would send probably...
How about Difficult Conversation?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think this is so much about... Yeah, you know what I think would be a really good one is The Law of Happiness.
Okay.
Because it's good... It's
Say
good,
that again.
The Law of Happiness.
We'll send that to you.
It's about all the happiness research and how the Bible mm-hmm. and science are saying the same thing about how we get to be happy people. And I think there's some great spiritual conversations in there that you'd be able to have with her.
All right. Thank you, Jan. God bless you. By the way, Henry, I was reading an article on happiness.
Yeah.
And it was talking about money. And it says, it said that $72,000 is the most happiness that money can buy. In other words, at 72, you level out, pay for health care. You know, you've got some things that you don't have at 22. But it said beyond 72, don't be expecting money to provide any level of happiness in your life. I just thought it was really interesting, and there must be some truth there.
Well, yeah, the truth is that and the number kind of changes a little bit here and there depending on circumstances. But what all the research shows, and I was, you know, I spent a lot of time in all that research, and there's been a ton done. And basically it says this, after you're past the basic security needs, you got to have a roof over your head and know where your food's coming from and that kind of thing, then basically it just does not contribute much. And yet people...
Speaking of contributing, help us.
Because we don't have our security needs
at New Life.
No.
For, you know, the lights staying on and things like that. So
anything that you make over $72,000, send us. It's not going to help you. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by getting you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry.
To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.